It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Welcome to Screen Talk, IndieWire's weekly movie podcast. I'm Eric Cohn, the executive editor and chief critic, joined as always by Ann Thompson, our editor at large. And it's a weird time of the year. Once again, we're realizing that here in late May, we should be at the Cannes Film Festival getting through a huge crop of international movies and having late nights on the Croisette and looking ahead to Memorial Day and the summer movie season. Well, we are anticipating Cannes, and we are looking ahead to the summer movie season, but it feels a little bit different. And I wonder how that's sitting with you, because to me, it's like I have to stop sometimes and realize just how much the timeline has been disrupted over the past year.
It just throws you. It just throws all your rhythms. You know, I mean, I shouldn't be preparing to go to New York for Tribeca.
Which, by the way, we're happy that you are.
And I'm delighted to be coming. I want to see the Anthony Bourdain. I want to see the Soderbergh. I mean, there's plenty of action, lots of documentaries to catch up on. I'm very excited.
But yeah, summer season of Tribeca.
I want to see you in person, Eric.
It'll be a lot of fun. But the idea, you're right, the idea of kicking off the actual summer season with the Tribeca Film Festival is totally different. It's usually an April festival. And by June, it's just really hard to think about festivals in general because you're coming out of Cannes and tipping into the fall. So, you know, you're sort of getting your druthers about what the rest of the year is going to look like. And instead, it kind of feels like in June, we're going to be revving our engines for a really dense season that'll start with Cannes in July and go straight into the fall season.
So it's weird because we've got Memorial Day coming up and we've got Quiet Place 2, which you and I have both seen and we can talk about now, right?
We're allowed.
So that movie, I found it what happens when you go back to the theater and you're in a real sound and image kind of thing, it hits you more intensely when you're not used to it, maybe. And that movie is a relentless series of jolts.
I mean, it's all built around that.
That's what it is. It is very straightforward.
Silence and then sudden shocking sound. That's what that movie is built around into its premise, and that's what a jump scare really is.
And it starts, it's a jump scare, right. So they got a Yelp out of me at one point. I won't tell you when. But
a few times worked on me, too. Sometimes I get annoyed with that. I had fun watching this movie. I had a lot of issues with it, but it was fascinating. I mean, just in terms experientially, I've been to the movies a bunch. I've been to New York art houses, and I've been to press screenings that were set up, you know, for me and maybe one or two other peers over the past year. But this was the first time I went to a multiplex for one of those all media screenings, and that was really fascinating, seeing a couple IndieWire peers, a couple other journalists who I hadn't seen in a while, and sitting in a Dolby Theater at Lincoln Square. You know, it was fascinating to get back into that and realize, oh, okay, even if the movie itself is not a slam dunk, and this one is definitely not, I felt like it was a retread in certain ways. It's got some very strange decisions in the second half, but it delivers a certain kind of visceral, very uniquely blockbuster kind of excitement that is so particular to sitting in a big theater with the ideal sound
right.
and image.
So in a way it was enjoyable, and in a way it was torture. but you could also see it all a mile away. You know, there's this intricate, you know, if he gives you a close up of some significant thing, you know that significant thing is going to be a plot point later on. So you kind of figure out what's going on. I love the way he handled Millicent Simmons. You know,
she's the real star.
So good and so delightful as an actress to just be with her and watch her be the sort of honorable core of the movie, rising to the occasion as a heroic figure. And Emily Blunt is a heroic figure too, also rising to the occasion. But it is having a baby be a newborn baby being a vulnerable character in this family saga was another level of stakes that I found hard to take. You know,
there were a lot of things I found hard to take. I mean, the problem with this movie is that it's got the same really savvy premise of the original, which was the screenplay that, and, you know, everybody told that story about the screenplay bouncing around and finally making its way into Hollywood and being a hot project. It doesn't really build on that, I think, in very interesting ways. So you kind of feel like, even though there's some new characters, it gives you a little bit more backstory in terms of how things went down on the initial invasion from these crazy monster things. But it's still, like, ultimately, I felt like I was just watching the same movie with a few other variables. It just, and there's that Deus Ex Machina thing too, where it's like, haven't we seen enough movies where things happen just in the nick of time? You know, why is it that in the writer's room, nobody says, hey, this is a little bit too tidy. Can we just tweak a bit here and there to make it more organic? That kind of thing. But I mean, that's a blockbuster problem.
Well,
right?
I know it's going to be huge. I mean, I'm not even worried about it. I mean, there's no way it won't be huge. But I'm thinking that the older parental demographic may want to give this a pass, because it's
gory.
it's any parent of a child is just going to be, you know, tortured by it. And the other question for me is the pandemic question. I mean, what movie was this before the pandemic, and what is it afterwards, when we're all
pandemic.
Still recovering,
yep.
Still having a bit of PTSD from what we've just been through. I mean,
right.
It was a serious thing. We're not entirely out of it, but we're getting
right?
there.
I enjoyed, frankly, and I'm curious to know how other audience members feel, but I enjoyed the fantasy of destruction, right? So Susan Sontag wrote this great essay years ago, The Imagination of Disaster, where she's basically like, these movies like Godzilla or whatever, they take the horror that's real about our world and they translate it into something that we can delight in. And that's the fundamental escapism in play. That's essentially what I got out of it. I was like, it's nice to watch the end of the world in a way that's supposed to be entertaining. It's not everyone having to wear masks and social distance and stay at home. It's something that's completely ridiculous. And so you can escape the ridiculousness that you've been living through with something else. And I did enjoy that, and I wonder if that's something that worth noting. It's like, it's not like we're going to get a bunch of pandemic thrillers, but I don't think we've lost end of the world movies. You know, that trope, I think people will be happy to see that sort of treated in more of an entertainment. And that's probably why people will enjoy watching Quiet Place 2, and maybe they'll be forgiving of some of the plot holes and stuff, because going to a big screen movie is fun. I haven't seen F9 yet. I think we should probably get a chance to see that one, because that seems like...
That's
going to
be even
so.
Bigger. That one, yeah. That's later in June. But the one that's coming up next is Cruella, which I could have gone to a screening yesterday, but I had a deadline. Hello. And so I got them to send me a link. I'll see it tomorrow. I wish I was seeing that on the big screen, actually. But, you know, time was pressing. And I did go to another screening last night of something I can't talk about yet, which was quite good. And it was lovely to be. And this was a case where I went back to the anonymous screening room. And last time, everybody was wearing masks and trying to be very careful. This time, not a mask in sight. It was Hollywood is assuming that everybody's vaccinated, and that's it. At the event yesterday, which we should talk about, the Big Screen is Back event, which was at the AMC 15 in Century City, and it was like everybody had to wear a mask inside.
You better wear your mask at
the
something
theater.
Like that.
Yeah, and everybody was distanced. So there were only 34 people there, members of the press, and they were putting on a group show from all the studios, 13 people, 13 companies participated, indies, subsidiaries, and studios. And it was really a long... 3.5 hour thing.
The headline for your story kind of says it all. Hollywood spent nearly 4 hours telling the press it wants moviegoers back in theaters. In that amount of time, you could stuff in at least 1.5 blockbusters. So
it was a lot of trailers that we've already seen before. It was a lot of there were some sizzle reels, and Arnold did a we're back routine, and J.J. Abrams was lovely, but. It was really
basically CinemaCon, right? It's CinemaCon stuffed into
CinemaCon
4 hours.
CinemaCon has a certain charm that is actually based on the idea that all these Hollywood stars are coming in on the company jets and putting on a show for some 4,000 exhibitors. And there's an audience there, and they're clapping and applauding and excited, and they want to see the movie stars that you know bring people into their theaters. There's something organic and real about that interaction, and it will occur in August. It'll be moved back to August, but this was a very small scale version of that,
but it generated press, and I can't quite parse whether or not the press it generated was strong enough to make the case that this is the big screen presentation that needs to happen ahead of the first summer movie season with the pandemic on the waning.
I think
side.
The reality is that marketing has to kick in, and people are going to hear that Cruella is good and Quiet Place Part Two is good, and they will go back and they'll have a good time and they'll be reminded of how much fun it is. Godzilla got them back in, even at the end of March. So I don't see why these other two pre-sold, pre-branded movies won't be big hits. I can't see why they wouldn't be.
I mean, it seems to me like the 1-2 punch. I mean, I don't know about Cruella. That's that one I'm very curious about. But F9 and Black Widow being these two kinds of aspects of the big screen experience that seem like they still have a lot of currency, you know, like the big franchise explosive spectacle experience, and then the Marvel movie that does that on top of, you know, world building that's really exciting to people.
At the same time that they're offering it on PVOD for a price at Disney Plus,
so that's
which
a real
I think
test.
Is really interesting.
It's a real
and test. That's a sign of a certain kind of conservatism on Disney's part. Like, they need to make that money. They have to back themselves up on a I don't get that one.
It's
why they wouldn't just go broke with theaters on Cruella.
Yeah, I mean,
Black Widow.
Black Widow, because it's strange on one level, because if you're going to have to get people to theaters, it's probably a good idea to put something that is super exclusive in terms of what it's offering. I mean, the spoilers and stuff, you know, as soon as it's on PVOD, certain fans are just going to want to have it so quickly they don't even want to get in their cars or the subway or whatever to go to the movie theater. They just want it now.
And that's, you know, that's Disney on some level admitting that they've already given up on theatrical. I don't understand it. There were some interesting, I mean, Kevin Feige at the event presented a video thing, and he made a big, big fuss about how he wants people to see his Marvel movies in theaters. That's how they were intended to be made, and that's how they should be seen. So he did not pull any punches on that. So you can see that there's an argument being made inside the studio. If Kevin Feige were voting, he wouldn't want Black Widow to be on PVOD, clearly.
Yeah, and I'm sure that on the Pixar side of things with Luca,
exactly, they're unhappy too. They've also expressed unhappiness.
It's frustrating.
It's thing during a pandemic, but we're out of the pandemic now.
We're getting there in any case. I mean, that's sort of part of it, right? Is that we're not in the same world we were in at the start of 2020, even if you could say at some point in the summer, maybe the CDC will say there is no more pandemic because cases are too low, which isn't going to happen, by the way, because in some parts of the world, it's still really bad. In some parts of the country, it's still really bad. So we aren't actually out of the pandemic, and some people are still afraid to go out, and some people shouldn't, because in some parts of the country, it's still not safe to do that. So it's an imperfect situation, but at the same time, if you're going to invest in a certain approach and use theaters as a launch pad, go ahead and use those theaters. I mean, it's going to be fascinating to see how much more complicated the arguments about this get now, because some people trust them and some don't.
Some people, I mean, there've been they came out with some statistics and polling that they did of a million people around the world and how much they're apparently in China, the confidence is back up to 95% because everything's clear as a bell over there. In other parts of the world, less so. It would seem to me that if you wear a mask on an airplane and you're willing to fly, you should be willing to wear a mask in a theater. And they still have distant seating in theaters, not on airplanes. I just took one back and forth from the East Coast, and there were no empty seats on the second round of flights I took.
So. Yeah, I mean, and I think this is only going to intensify. Walking around New York, you know, this past week we went back to 100% for most businesses, and you don't have to wear a mask, you know, all the time. You don't have to wear a mask when you're outside, but you still see people wearing masks, maybe because they're going in and out of places, and most businesses seem to still be requiring them. The only place where I was sort of caught off guard was I went into a convenience store to get some water or something. And, you know, the guy behind the counter wasn't there was no mask in sight. A couple of weeks ago, that would have been taboo. Now, totally legal and totally fine. So we're going to start seeing these kind of subtle changes and those shifts.
I think
shifts.
People are still wearing masks in shopping, you know, in supermarkets.
But little
so
by
on.
Little, things will change.
Interiors,
and that, it's going to take a really long time to get beyond that. And so then that leaves this question of when do you get to the point where going to the movie theater doesn't require you to dress up like you're going to the hospital? And it's not, nobody knows.
As soon as everybody's sitting down with their popcorn and their soda, they're allowed to take their mask off.
Yeah. Which
in the theater.
But then some people don't like that. Yeah.
Assuming there are lots of people in there who aren't vaccinated,
right.
You know, that's an issue. That's why I keep my mask on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, honestly, can you just wait 2 hours before you eat the ridiculously oversized and overpriced popcorn? I was marveling at those. The costs are still outrageous at multiple.
Of course they are. Of course they are.
I can't understand that. I mean, I just smuggle in your own food or have a meal beforehand or something, man. Like, anyway, that's my pet peeve that, you know, predates the pandemic. But I will admit I did have a good time going to the Nighthawk a few weeks ago and ordering some drinks to go along with watching Shiva Baby. That was a good time, and I'd like to think that most people in the theater were vaccinated, but I didn't take a poll. So everybody's standards are different now. That's just kind of the world that we're in right now. Speaking of seeing something in our house, so I will say one of the things I really enjoyed about your report and others from this event was knowing that it wasn't just about the big Hollywood movies. You had the indie,
I think,
representation.
The reality seems to be what I read out of this was that not to put too fine a point on it, the theater owners have been humbled by this whole experience. They were holding out like they were strong, tough, you know, big companies with lots of money that they could, you know, fight off the studios and everything. And now they're on their knees, as it were, and they need all the content they can get. And one of the sources of that content is going to be the independents and the specialty companies,
right,
who still need theaters, who can't just send movies all over the world or put them on PVOD and expect to get it. They need to brand their movies. They need to build them into something by being in theaters for a long time. That's their business. So I think they figured that out.
So I was excited to see that they were, that, you know, A24 is pushing Green Knight, which, you know, when the trailer got out, people were super enthusiastic about that. I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of the stuff that Neon has, like this weird Nicolas Cage movie Pig and Year of
that
Everlasting
Storm. That actually
looked
good. It looked like the Truffle Hunters meets
John Wick
Nick
or
Cage.
Something. Yeah, right, Mandy. Truffle Hunters meets Mandy. But but the thing about that slate is the range of it. I mean, Year of Everlasting Storm, I forgot this was a project with a Pitchapong and Jafar Panahi and all these amazing filmmakers doing shorts.
Laura Poitras.
Like, yeah, it's like a little Cannes selection or something. And Michel Franco's New Order, I saw that last fall. That's
I love that
movie.
I highly recommend that movie.
Yeah, really.
And the trailer was really good.
But it stirs people up, and not everybody loves it, but it's a good movie to argue about, which I live for, obviously. So
Rebecca Hall's night house looked really scary and, you know, beautiful. It looked, you know, Searchlight has that. So there's some optimism. The other one that looked good to me was 9 Days, the Sony Pictures Classics movie. Some of these, a lot of movies that were debuted in Sundance and have been held all this time. The other one being the Heidi Ewing movie, which I thought that must have come out long ago.
I wasn't a huge 9 Days fan. I saw it back at Sundance 2020, but it's a weird one, and it has Spike Jonze as a presenter, which makes a lot of sense. It's got a very bizarre kind of dreamlike aspect to its setting that will be fun for people to talk about. Actually kind of similar to Soul in certain ways, but more of a straight drama in terms of how it plays out. But I Carry You With Me is a beautiful movie.
Great
about
movie.
Immigration
Great romance.
Crisis. So yeah, and overdue to get out there. So yeah, I mean, all the usual players are gearing up to take advantage of this stuff happening. It's quite something, and I'll be curious to see how it dovetails into Cannes and then the fall movie season as well, because, you know, we're making plans to go to Cannes. We're talking about Telluride. We're talking about something will happen with the festivals that will launch Oscar season. So is something in this slate also going to be a part of that conversation? How is that going
to
continue?
One thing I noticed, one of the most obvious Oscar movies that was presented, I mean, aside from In the Heights or Cruella getting costume nominations or something, In the Heights is probably going to be in the Oscar conversation. But the one that probably for the grandmother, the abuela, you know, that'll be a supporting actress nom for sure. The other one is Respect, which was supposed to be in the Oscar lineup, and it got
Long
pushed back. So Jennifer Hudson is Aretha Franklin. Forest Whitaker is her dad. Audra McDonald is her mom. It looks really good, actually. And it has the songs in it that are not in the Nat Geo Aretha Franklin series that starred Cynthia Erivo. That one didn't have Respect. That one didn't have Chain of Fools, you know, all of that.
It barely got released because Aretha didn't want it released during her lifetime, and then it became a whole thing after she passed. So this one has gotten around that problem early.
No, this one had her approval. This one had Jennifer Hudson. She was handpicked. She had to learn how to play the piano.
You'll be telling that story a lot.
Singing live.
We'll hear that on and on. And I think
Respect.
It'll be fascinating.
Be prepared, everybody.
She's going to be singing it on the late night
show. But that's coming out in August in the usual sort of time frame that a lot of, you know, The Help came out then. The Butler
crowd-pleasing Oscar
then.
Movies.
It's a certain slot.
Yeah, and I mean,
Spike Lee often has his films open in August.
And Jennifer Hudson is so already so respected in terms of what she does. So that's the kind of movie where even if the movie isn't, you know, a critical favorite, it seems sort of like the kind of thing where you can kind of assume that her performance is the thing the engine that you look for to carry something like that. So fingers crossed it delivers on that front, but it's good to hear that the preview was good.
The Nat Geo series was like a full length series, right? You know, all the hours put in on the backstory and the ongoing biography. And I wish they had been able to do that one in fewer episodes. It actually may work better as a 2-hour movie.
That's a fascinating point of contrast. And so were you thrilled by Venom, Let There Be Carnage? Sounds like it would be really up your alley.
No, it's apparently gotten 1 billion views so far, the trailer.
Whatever the hell that means.
You know, I didn't even see the first one, and you know I'm a Tom Hardy fan.
It was silly.
I'm a fan of Tom Hardy, but not for Venom.
I mean, the problem is that there is an appeal for Venom as a character. It's baked into the comics mythology, and Tom Hardy plus Venom is fascinating. As a young comics geek, I really liked the storyline about the Carnage character, who's sort of this, you know, Venom is an alien symbiote, right? So he has a sort of offspring that a serial killer gets a hold of, and that's Carnage. So it's like Venom is sort of a more intense hero of sorts than Spider-Man, and Carnage is like this villain who's similar to Venom, has the same kind of powers. So he's a really interesting, it's a really interesting storytelling device, because they're sort of like, it's like if you had Spider-Man, two Spider-Men.
It's Jekyll and Hyde.
Right, exactly. In a way, yes. But it's also like if you had two Spider-Men and one was good and one was bad, or two Supermen, right? It's this idea of what do you do with the powers at your disposal. I don't know if that means it's going to be a good movie.
Maybe I'll catch up with it. Maybe I should have seen it. I mean, I'll catch up with the first one.
Like I said, I didn't love it. I thought it was actually kind of silly, and Michelle Williams in particular, I felt bad for. But the concept and Tom Hardy as an actor and all this kind of stuff, it has a lot of ongoing potential. So we'll see what happens on that front. Anyway, next week, I guess, we talk about Cruella. We go deep and long on this 134-minute movie that better justify all 134 minutes, as far as I'm concerned, because time is precious these days.
I don't think you're the target audience, Eric.
You never know. You never know. Anything's possible. I'm sure we've got some other good stuff that's opening up. Did you get a chance to see Army of Dead yet? It's on Netflix now.
They finally sent it to me. I mean,
go watch it.
I think it opens tomorrow, right?
Yeah, exactly. We're recording on Thursday, so by the time this is out, it's
but I can
all
see it. I could have, if I'd gotten my act together, I could have watched. They sent it to me literally today.
But let's see how it goes. I mean, if it's as huge a hit as it seems like it could be for the service, we might, who knows, maybe we'll get some kind of weird numbers game from them or something. I mean, to me, what I found fascinating about this is that it's a movie that's arriving as a full-fledged franchise. They've already shot a prequel to it that's coming out later this year, and there's an anime series coming out next year. And I even have an idea when I was watching, I think it's a spoiler to reveal this, so I won't reveal it, but the way the movie ends sets up a really ambitious possibility for a sequel as well. It's a big cliffhanger. So it seems to me like this is Netflix's first fairly impressive attempt at launching a franchise. I mean, it's not going to be Star Wars or something because it's gory and R-rated, but it's something that people could really get into. So that's your homework. Mine is to watch Cruella, which I know you were already planning on doing. And I'm sure we'll have a good time chatting through things as usual as we count down to Cannes and many other things that we like to talk about.
I'm going
to
see you soon.
See you soon, Anne. Have a good weekend, and I will talk to you next week.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.